Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Well, it could come any day. Mitt Romney's announcement of who will join him on the ticket to run against Obama and Biden. So we will open up the phones to begin today's show for Republicans to call in and tell us if you have a preference. 212-433-WNYC. Call it an informal, unofficial, thoroughly unscientific midsummer Veep Stakes poll here on The Brian Lehrer Show. We do this once every 4 years. Today's the day for 2012, in this case just for Republicans, because that's the only party that needs to pick one. Do you care? 212-433-9692. The Times reports today that Chris Christie ain't it because of his big mouth. The Miami Herald reports today that Marco Rubio probably ain't it because of his half-hearted Romney endorsement, among other reasons. The ghost of Sarah Palin, you know, hangs over this process. So who should Romney pick? Who should Romney avoid? Republican listeners, who is it? If it's up to you, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post it to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. By the way, are you screaming at your radio right now? No, no, you fools. No, Rubio. Do you think Christie, his bluntness is exactly what Romney needs to balance his blowing in the wind reputation? Pete Seeger comes later in the show. The blowing in the wind candidate gets talked about now. Who should be his running mate? While your calls are coming in, let's talk to Washington Post political reporter Chris Saliza. He writes the column known as The Fix and also has a new book called The Gospel According to The Fix, an insider's guide to a less than holy world of politics. Oh, Chris, I thought it was divine.
The sacred and the profane all mixed into one.
Exactly. So, you know, I think it's interesting that New York's and Miami's hometown papers today both have articles about why it's not going to be their local guys. Is there evidence that both Christie and Rubio are really out?
Well, here's the problem, and I think it's probably a good way to start any conversation about the Veep Stakes or, you know, who's going to be VP, which is a very small group of people actually have access to what Mitt Romney is thinking. That includes Mitt Romney, his wife Ann Romney, Beth Myers, who managed his 2008 campaign but is heading up the VP search now, and Matt Rhodes, who is the current Romney campaign manager. You get beyond those four people, and I'm not sure anyone really has even close to a full picture. So what's hard as a reporter, I would say, is that there's this huge amount of interest in knowing who Romney might pick, who he's thinking about, who's favored, who's not favored. And yet the ability to get accurate information that answers those questions is so hard. I mean, I think that that caveat aside, mm-hmm. I plunge in. I think that Chris Christie is not likely to be the pick. I think that while his bluntness is appealing in its way, I think that he has not been in office all that long. I think Romney, he has not been in elected office barely ever. This is his first elected office. I think Romney would like someone with a little bit deeper resume and maybe someone who might not go off message as much as Chris mm-hmm. Christie could.
Let's dive in on that deeper resume notion
sure.
by taking John in the Bronx. Hi, John. You're on the air on WNYC. Hi.
Hi. I'm a little bit upset about Romney receiving the nomination anyhow, because I think he's the antithesis of the populist candidate that the party needs. So perhaps I'm being a little bit disingenuous when I say that Condoleezza Rice is the perfect running mate for him, because, you know, they're kind of cut from the same mold. I'm not sure I think Romney is electable, but whatever members of the party they're going to get that are Bushites, let's call them, then Condoleezza Rice is the perfect candidate if he thinks he can win with a legacy Republican policy ticket.
Uh-huh. And is it just strategy, John, in your opinion, or also does Condoleezza Rice bring something in, let's say, foreign affairs that Romney doesn't have in his background?
I she definitely brings something that Romney doesn't have in his background, you know. But she's the only candidate that has any chops that he can pick. If he's not going to pick somebody out of the Senate, let's say, I think Marco Rubio is a little bit light, maybe a little better of a populist choice, but I don't think he's got the chops. I don't think he brings the clout that he needs. So, you know, if he's got any chance of winning the nomination, he's going to need somebody that's got that
gravitas,
experience.
John, thank you very much for starting us off. So let's take both tracks of what he said there, Chris.
Sure.
First on Condoleezza Rice. Well, what do you think about the whole Condi thing? It's been so much in the news in the last week.
Absolutely. Let me first. I thought John made a really good point about populism, Brian, which is that he is right. Mitt Romney is not a populist, an economic populist in any meaningful way. You'd be kind of a Mike Huckabee type would be your right fit maybe for these times. I think that's a good point. Now on Condoleezza Rice. I don't think there's any question she would be the kind of pick that would transform the race in some way. I tend to think that vice presidential picks matter less than we all think they do. I think a pick of Condoleezza Rice would matter for a lot of reasons. She's an African-American woman. She spent time in two different cabinet posts in the Bush administration. There's just a lot there that both good and bad that I think would have a real impact on the race. Now, I know there has been lots of speculation about that she is on the short list. I think that Mitt and Ann Romney like Condoleezza Rice. They personally, they're obviously impressed by her resume. She spoke at a Romney fundraising retreat in Utah a few weeks back and really, I think, wowed a lot of the donor types with her speech. So I think some of the Condoleezza boomlet is coming from donors who would like to see it. I still think it is very unlikely for a couple of reasons. One, she does have deep ties to the Bush administration, including the lead up to the war in Iraq, which I don't think that Mitt Romney necessarily wants to relitigate in the fall election. Picking her would allow Barack Obama to make a very strong case that picking that electing Mitt Romney is a step backwards, not a step forward. The other thing,
and Rice those lines is seen as maybe war criminal is too strong, but damaged goods by people in many parts of the world because of the Bush war and detention policies that she was intimately involved with.
Right. I think she definitely she bears the sort of political and policy scars of the Bush administration.
Yes.
In the world. You know, the other thing I would say, and this is much more domestic focus, but she has expressed on life issues, she has expressed what I think would be described by many in the conservative base as a pro-choice point of view.
Now, I think you could call it that. And I've seen the websites where the anti-abortion groups have really risen up and, you know, write in pretty strong language why they would oppose Condoleezza Rice's election and might sit out November if it was hers, at least according to some people I've seen writing online. So do you think he can't pick anybody who's pro-choice, period?
I do. And I would just hearken back to 2008. John McCain wanted to pick Joe Lieberman as his running mate, the Connecticut senator, independent, former Democrat. Joe Lieberman was with John McCain on virtually every foreign policy matter,
sure,
including the war in Iraq, but Joe Lieberman is pro-choice, and that's why he was vetoed. There were concerns that there would be an uprising at the Republican National Convention among pro-life Republicans. I just don't think you want to go down that road when the economy is where it is and the Romney folks believe they can win a referendum on the economy.
We're doing our once every 4 year set. See, the difference between what we're doing here, I think, and what they do on the cable news channels is they do it there every day for 6 months. But we do it once every 4 years. Who do you want to be the vice presidential nominee for your party? Who's got one to pick? 212-433-WNYC. 212-433-9692. This decision is coming. Let your voice be heard. There are definitely campaign officials listening. Maybe you've got the argument that puts them over the top for your man or woman. As we talk about it with Chris Cillizza, the Washington Post political columnist who writes The Fix, that column, and is the author now of The Gospel According to The Fix, an insider's guide to a less than holy world of politics. 212-433-WNYC, Republicans, 433-9692. Jerry in Woodside. Hi, Jerry, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing, Brian?
Right. Okay.
I personally, I don't like Rick Santorum. He hasn't been mentioned on the short list at all, but, you know, he ran for president. He was his, he was Romney's main rival. I think we unify the party, and one of my main problems with Romney is he seems to be a little flip-floppy. I think Santorum would solidify the view. I think it would strengthen the party, in my opinion.
Jerry, thank you very much. Has Santorum even endorsed Romney yet, Chris?
I think he kind of sort of has. It was certainly not a ringing endorsement. And, well, I think the caller makes some good points about Rick Santorum. There's no way that's going to happen. I don't think Rick Santorum and Mitt Romney have any kind of relationship. And I think that one thing that's overlooked when it comes to the VP pick, you know, we spend a lot of time talking about geography and ideology. And I think one of the important things is, does the nominee like the VP pick? Does he feel like it's someone who is going to work, push the rock in the same direction? And I think that's especially true in the wake of John McCain picking Sarah Palin, where the last month of the campaign seemed like Palin and McCain were fighting each other more than they were fighting Barack Obama. So I think personal relationships should not be overlooked. Romney and Santorum have none, and it's just not going to happen.
By the way, we have a full board of Republicans, but we also have a comments page that includes some trolling Democrats, like Sarah from Bushwick, who writes, Romney should consider outsourcing the VP. He could save the taxpayers a bundle of money by getting a polite guy from India.
He's going to be calling up over here.
So let's see. How about James in the Bronx? Hi, James. You're on the air.
Yes, I think McDowell from Virginia.
Thank you. Tell us about him, Chris.
You know, it's interesting. James, 3 months ago, I think, would have been hitting on somebody that we would talk about as a top three potential pick. Bob McDonnell was elected in 2009. I'm sitting in Virginia as I talk to you. He carried Virginia overwhelmingly. This was a year after Barack Obama had won the state. And was sort of the hot commodity in Republican circles and widely talked about as a potential vice president, certainly more so than Chris Christie at the time, who they were both elected in 2009. McDonnell is, on the positive side, a very consistent messenger, someone who can talk smartly about the economy, someone who social conservatives like, and someone who comes from what we expect to be one of the biggest swing states in the country, in Virginia. On the downside, he struggled in some ways, not even of his own doing. The legislature, Republicans took over the legislature here in Virginia and have pushed through some pieces of legislation, including things that may have made it all the way up to New York City about transvaginal ultrasound. Some of these things that are really, really inflamed folks on the pro-choice side of the aisle. Again, McDonnell wound up, I think, being caught in the political crossfire a little bit. The Republican legislature really pushed these things. He wound up trying to mitigate the fight, but ultimately signing these bills. I just don't know that Romney purposely takes on, you know, remember a few months ago, Democrats were hitting Mitt Romney and Republicans their war on women. I don't know if Mitt Romney purposely takes on someone that allows Democrats and Barack Obama to make that argument very clearly and very effectively. And that's why I feel like McDonnell has really slipped down, you know, maybe even outside the top 10 potential people. He's certainly in the bottom half of that top 10 now, which is not something I would have said if we were having this conversation a few months ago.
We're going to take a break for a second, and when we come back, of course, we'll take more of your calls. John in Mount Kisco, hang on, because I want to take your Rubio call. But we're also going to play a clip of perhaps the most likely vice presidential candidate selection whose voice you don't know. Stay with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC as we talk about Mitt Romney's potential running mates with Chris Saliza, who writes the Fix column for The Washington Post, and is author of the new book, The Gospel According to the Fix, An Insider's Guide to a Less Than Holy World of Politics. Chris, I pulled four clips of potential running mates all doing the same thing that running mates have to do, and that is bashing Barack Obama, just as Joe Biden is going to get out there and bash Romney in language that Obama himself wouldn't use. This is a classic role for the vice presidential nominee.
Absolutely.
And the first one that I want to play is the guy I referred to before the break as the most likely to be selected whose voice you don't know. And this is Ohio Senator Rob Portman, who was the budget director for President George W. Bush. 27 seconds to bash Barack Obama. Go.
I don't think he understands how the private economy works. To say it's doing fine and to say the real problem is the public economy needs to have more of a stimulus indicates that the lessons have not been learned. We gave him the ball. The American people gave him the ball at a time when he was inheriting a tough economy, let's be honest. But in my view, he fumbled the ball. It's time to give the ball to somebody else.
Football metaphor. How original. But talk to me about Rob Portman. He was President Bush's budget director, which makes him a good business-like choice if the theme of the Romney campaign is all about getting federal spending under control. But his national name recognition is low, and I don't think that clip suggests he's Mr. Personality.
No, you know, Brian, you said this is a voice people won't know. I think Rob Portman is a person people simply don't know. Most polling suggests that, you know, 6 in 10 Republicans don't really know who Rob Portman is. He is a guy who is a known commodity in Washington. He served in the House, elected to the Senate in 2010. As you mentioned, he served as OMB director under Bush. He also was the U.S. trade rep under Bush. And he is from the state of Ohio, which, if it's not the most important state, is certainly in the top three most important states for Mitt Romney to win in the fall. I think that Portman, his strength and the reason he's probably at the top of most lists is that he is your best do-no-harm pick out there. He is solid. He is a good messenger. There's no doubt, given his resume, this is somebody who could, if Mitt Romney was elected president and then incapacitated, could step in to the job. The downside, you mentioned one of them, which is he is not particularly dynamic. You could argue that is a strength for him, but you could also argue it is a negative. He is not somebody who's going to light the Republican base on fire. The other thing is, he was the director of the Office of Management and Budget during the Bush years when the deficit grew considerably, including disappointing many people, including many Republicans. And again,
let's borrow
about
$1 trillion
right
to fight two wars and not put it on budget.
And the Bush tax cuts, and I mean, there's a case to be made there by Democrats, and I would add, just as I was when we were talking about Condoleezza Rice, when you pick someone who was in a major appointee to several positions under George W. Bush, you allow Barack Obama to effectively make the argument
case
that you are going backwards, not forward.
John in Mount Kisco, you're on WNYC. John, thanks for your patience.
Yeah, good morning, Brian. I think you're asking the wrong question when you're asking Republicans.
Whoops, are we losing John? John, I know you're identifying yourself as an independent.
I am an independent vote.
And we're losing you, but you're going to say Rubio because he will appeal to independents and that should be the target audience?
Because I want there to be a clear choice. You don't allow Romney to equivocate and try to be all things to all people.
All right. Unfortunately, we're losing John's line. But I think we have his argument. I gather he's an independent who's attracted to Marco Rubio. And it, I guess, raises the eternal question, do you want your vice presidential pick, do you want your whole campaign to energize your base or get the swing voters to swing your way?
Absolutely. Always a big question. And certainly something that I think the Romney camp weighs. I actually think Marco Rubio could do both of those things. He is very popular with the base. Remember, this is somebody who became kind of the face of the Tea Party movement when he beat Charlie Crist, or was going to beat Charlie Crist before Charlie Crist, the governor of Florida, switched parties and became an independent.
So he does have bona fides in that conservative movement. He is also a Cuban-American who should be able to reach out to the middle or at least to Hispanic voters better than many of the other potential Republican picks. You know, I think Rubio in some ways, if there was never a Sarah Palin, I think we'd be talking more about Marco Rubio, Brian, which is that I think Palin was someone who obviously had a brief resume in elected office, mayor of a small town in Alaska and then elected governor of the state 2 years before she was picked. Marco Rubio has spent a few terms in the Florida state legislature before being elected to the U.S. Senate. So I think that thin-ish resume might not have worked against him if we had never had the whole Sarah Palin thing. But because we have, I think it's leading Mitt Romney to shy away from picking anyone who is even potentially labeled as not ready for prime time or who could not step into the office on day one.
Interesting. Unless, in the case of Rubio, he thought that this race is really going to be decided in a few western swing states, and that if Rubio can pick off, they're never going to win the Latino vote in a majority out there, but if he could pick off 5% and so they'd get 38% instead of 33% or something like that, and
yeah,
that would
absolutely
make the difference in total votes, that's what it would have to be.
Colorado, Nevada, New Mexico, all of those states are both swing states and states with significant Hispanic populations. As you point out, Marco Rubio on the ticket doesn't help Mitt Romney win the Hispanic vote, but if he loses it less badly, then he's got a little bit more margin in other demographics.
All right. Now, I said we're going through some clips of potential candidates auditioning on the network talk shows by bashing Barack Obama, which they'll need to do on the campaign trail. So here's a montage of three, and in this order, you will hear Tim Pawlenty, Bobby Jindal, and Kelly Ayotte. Pawlenty first.
This president is a declinist. He views America as one of equals around the world. We're not the same as Portugal. We're not the same as Argentina. And this idea that we can't have 5% growth in America is hogwash. It's a defeatist attitude.
Median family income has now decreased. Now, under this president, over $4,000, median family worth, two-decade low. By any measure, his policies have been a failure. The president himself said at the beginning of his term, he said, give us 3 years. If we can't turn this around, this will be a one-term proposition.
The economy and jobs are going to decide this election, and his record on that is abysmal. We've had over 40 straight months of over 8% unemployment, dismal jobs reports, and his policies have been a failure when it comes to turning our economy around.
All right, Kelly Ayotte, freshman senator from New Hampshire, Bobby Jindal, the governor of Louisiana, and the former governor of Minnesota, Tim Pawlenty. When we're talking about either major party, but especially when we're talking about the Republican Party, anybody who's a female or not white stands out as, wow, that's really interesting. So what about Kelly Ayotte or Bobby Jindal, who's Indian American, in that respect? Is that what they're talking about? Like, do we make an impression by going in those directions, or is it not about that?
I think that it's clearly that's a part of the calculation, because the Republican strategists and Republican elected officials understand that being that character of the Republican Party as a party of old white men is not a recipe for national party success moving forward as the country continues to diversify, as the Hispanic population continues to grow, continues to age, continues to register to vote, that they have to find ways of not being typecast. You know, if the percentage of white voters as a percentage of the overall electorate has declined in four or five straight national elections and will continue to decline, the Republican Party knows that. So I think the calculation of trying to show different faces is important. I think that's why 2010, the midterm elections, actually mattered, because you saw people like Susana Martinez, a Hispanic woman, a Republican elected in New Mexico. You saw Brian Sandoval, Hispanic man elected in Nevada. You saw Nikki Haley, who we're not even talking about, but in South Carolina, Indian American Republican woman elected. So you saw some non-white faces elected in the Republican Party. So that is important. I would say out of Jindal and Kelly Ayotte, Jindal is the much more likely. I keep going back to the resume thing. Jindal is only 41 years old, but he has a significant resume. He served several terms in Congress. He's been elected and reelected as the governor of Louisiana. This is someone who was the head of the National Bipartisan Commission on Medicare when he was 27 years old. When he was 25 years old, he was the head of Louisiana's Department of Health and Human Services. So this is somebody with real kind of chops from a policy perspective, despite his age. And well, I think that makes him a little bit more likely.
We're way over time, but the history of picks is so interesting. On the Republican side, Sarah Palin actually balanced the ticket in various ways as a true conservative, which McCain wasn't, and they badly needed the base, also for youth, while McCain was, you know, an older guy, and the gender issue, when you had the first black candidate who had just defeated Hillary Clinton. Dick Cheney gave a foreign policy gravitas to George Bush that he didn't have. And you could go back and back and back and look at all the different ones. The oddest one to me, though it definitely worked, was Clinton picking Al Gore, who was sort of the same as him. You know,
right, kind of a doubling down on the New South.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But
Brian, can I add one thought on the Republican side that someone smart told me, and I think it's a good thing to at least think about?
30 seconds.
Go all the way back. About 30 or 40 years, every Republican vice presidential pick has been an attempt to balance the ticket ideologically. The only exception to that, sort of, is George W. Bush picking Dick Cheney, which was not exactly. But you've basically seen people picking, if you're seen as a moderate, you pick a conservative. If you're seen as a conservative, you pick a moderate. If you're seen as a social conservative, you pick a fiscal conservative. It's a fascinating little dynamic there. Mitt Romney clearly seen kind of as a moderate that would argue that he picks someone who is known strongly nationally as a conservative voice, if you believe that theory.
Very briefly, your new book, The Gospel According to the Fix. We hope to have you back for a proper book interview, and we'll really talk about it. I don't know. I see the list of things you write about here in the press materials. Give me one.
Well, look, let me talk. I'll talk very broadly about it. Basically, the book is, if you like politics, and you like kind of the game of it, the stats, the people, the personalities, the history, you'll like the book. It's an easy summary. It's 221 pages. I did not write a 600-page book about what's wrong with Washington and how to fix it. This is meant to show my passion for politics and maybe convince people who are not as passionate about it that they should be.
And you get a few laughs along the way.
Yeah, I try.
Chris Elizabeth, thanks a lot.
Thank you, sir.
And, of course, we will talk again during this campaign season.